On this week's show, we look at tabular data, design templates, and how to get an honest word out of your clients. Help me, Marcus. My OCD is getting seriously out of control at the moment.
Really?
So I was up at like...
Grow out of that?
Or what, OCD?
Or, I don't know. Is it something... I've just offended millions of people.
Yeah, well, my OCD is a serious condition,
isn't
it?
I thought it was like, an allergy or something like that. It gets...
What do you think OCD is?
I've no idea. I'm making this up. I'm making conversation, Paul.
OCD is obsessional compulsive disorder.
Yeah. Haven't we all got it to a certain degree?
Yeah, but mine's getting out of control at the moment. I was up until like 2 a.m. tagging things in Evernote. It's an obsession. I suddenly
just... Do you want to come around and do my filing for me?
Yeah, I'm that kind of person. Have you ever seen the Big Bang episode where Sheldon goes round... whose house was it?
No.
Howard's house.
Oh, right.
Do you watch Big Bang?
No.
So funny, because... So, basically, Sheldon is autistic.
Right.
Or borderline autistic.
Yeah.
Absolute genius, but he suffers from serious OCD. And so, one of his friends, a guy called Howard, invites him round to his house to show him his walk-in cupboard, just because he knows that he'll have to go in and tidy it.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Is it which is a genius idea? So now is the time to get me around your house as my OCD is out of control.
Well, I just find like paper filings.
Right.
I have done it, but I basically do filing once a year.
Right.
Probably.
See, that's the trouble. It becomes such a big job,
I have
it?
A box.
Right.
Where... stuff that needs filing goes into.
Right.
And but occasionally I get caught out, so maybe once, twice a year I have to go through the list, through the pile of the stuff that needs filing, rather than being able to just go to where it lives.
Yes.
But some years I get away with it completely.
Yeah.
Winner. See what I mean?
But if you get to the end of the year and you haven't needed to look at the box, I suggest probably just set fire to the box.
No, you might need to look at it in next year or whatever. I had to find a receipt the other day.
Well, I've started going paperless, you see, so everything gets scanned into Evernote. But the result is I've got...
Some documents you have to keep, though, don't you?
There's not many. There are a few, but yeah.
Like your passport.
Yeah.
Like that.
They don't let you just turn up with a scanned version of your passport. They're funny like that.
I have got all of my CDs in alphabetical order, though.
That's impressive. So you've got a little bit of OCD.
Oh, yeah.
But I've got like 5,500 notes in Evernote now.
Mm-hmm.
And last night I decided that my entire tagging system was wrong. So I'm now re-tagging 5,000 notes. I have no life.
That's my problem with all filing, that every time I start doing it, I think there's a better way of doing this. And if anyone else was watching me, they'd be going, just tutting over my shoulder.
Absolutely.
What are you doing it like that for?
But that's the trouble. That's the trouble with tagging as well, right? You're going through, all these notes, and I keep going through them, and then I'll come across one, and I'll think, oh, that needs a new tag, like illustration.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I'm, say, 2,000 notes through. And then I'm thinking, well, those 2,000 notes, do I need to go back through them to see if any of them now need an illustration tag? So it's never-ending.
And also the problem with stuff like illustration, I suppose, no, that's not too bad, but if you've got 5,000 notes, if you tag everything sort of with, I don't know, image, bad example, but you're going to get 4,500 results.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, which is useless. Yeah. You've got to be specific enough. Absolutely.
So, I should get into Evernote, but can't be bothered.
They say you don't have to. I just find it a useful program, but there's no reason why you have to.
I like the idea of having stuff somewhere.
It encourages hoarding. This is my problem with it.
Yeah.
You just hoard information and then you don't look at it anymore.
Mm.
But
so it's actually a waste of life.
Absolute waste of life.
But then you go back and tag stuff that you're never going to look at ever again. That's no, true, though, isn't it?
No, it isn't entirely true. So I was saying to Chris earlier about this, that yes. It's great for blog post writing. Okay?
Yes.
Because if I'm writing...
If you were a songwriter, well, it would all be your little notebook, wouldn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
So it's great for, you know, not only do you keep blog post ideas in there, but say if I'm writing a blog post about usability. Mm. I can type in usability and it will bring back quotes of things people have, you know, said relating to usability, or statistics about usability, or, you know, good bookmarks I've made, or tools that I've found, or, you know, all of these different things, which makes writing blog posts a lot easier. At least that's the theory.
Yes. And I think it's great. I mean, I store my musical ideas on my iPhone. I record them in as voice memos.
Ah.
So it'd be nice if...
Because, you know, Evernote does that as well. You can put audio in it, which is really good. What you can't put in it, which really annoys me, is video. You can... Well, no, that's not true. You can put in video that you've recorded yourself, but I want to be able to copy and paste a YouTube video in there, that kind of thing.
You can copy the link to it, though, surely.
Yes, but just I want the video to play in it. I'm fussy. That's my problem with technology generally, is I always conclude, instead of going, wow, isn't this an amazing piece of software that's revolutionised my life, instead I go, oh, it'd be even better, it'd be really good if it could just do this.
You seem to put up quite nicely with your fan going at 1,000 miles an hour that no one else can cope with.
Yeah, we're trying out a new communication tool at Headscape called Squiggle. Link in the show notes to Squiggle. Mm-hmm. It's a really good idea in principle.
Well, it's
a
really
good idea, full stop, right?
Especially for us.
For us, it's perfect, because we all work remotely, right? Or a lot of us do.
Some of the time. It's a mix and match. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what Squiggle does is you log into it, and it connects to your webcam. Excuse me, burping on the podcast. I've got this overwhelming urge to do a really massive burp now. I won't. And it puts up little pictures of you, all of you, in your team, that refresh every 4 or 5 seconds.
Yep.
And then let's say I wanted to talk to Marcus. Why I would want to do that escapes me, but let's say I did. I just click on his picture and start speaking to him. He doesn't need to pick up at the other end. And it's just a great way of kind of seeing everybody in your team, and it's a great way of kind of being able to kind of tap someone on the shoulder and ask them a question.
That's exactly what it is. Mm. It's Skype, which we signed up for their group calls, and probably better quality than Squiggle. But it's always like the phone rings and you don't know if anyone's there and all that kind of thing. Whereas this, it is literally like tapping someone on the shoulder. So therefore, it's the closest to being in the same room
that
we can possibly find.
Yeah.
And we like it a lot, apart from the fact that it makes my fan run bloody.
Yes. But then it's still in alpha at the moment.
Yes.
So give them time. Hopefully.
I'm just complaining, hoping they're listening to this. Fix it.
Well, we're talking to them quite a lot, and we asked them to be able to turn off the notifications, and it was there the next day.
Yes, that's pretty good.
You can't complain at that, really, can you? So, I think the fan one is a bit more of a complicated one, because I think, to some degree, that's... I think if you had Skype open the whole time running a video session, you would also have a fan going. I think it's just accessing the webcam the whole time that does it.
Right.
But I might be wrong. We'll see. Hopefully it'll improve. Anyway, we've got some news stories to talk about. So should we talk about that?
I have one more thing to mention, which is, isn't it lovely now that it's proper spring, even summery?
Although I'm sitting here quite cold at the moment because I've only got a T-shirt on.
Well, yesterday wasn't very nice
I'm being
day,
negative.
But we've had another bank holiday weekend that was nice and warm and
sunny.
Great.
It's a shock.
Well, no, because we do moan about the weather so much on this podcast. You've got to say that at the moment, it's not bad at all.
Well done, God. Or something.
Yes.
All right. Right. First up, question from Daryl Snow. Do you want to read the question? Mr. Reader, I only wanted to say that so that you didn't, because I knew you wouldn't have it up in front of you. I bet you haven't even read it either.
I really haven't.
No.
One second.
This is a question you said we should include, because he sent you a joke, and it included a question as well, and you forwarded it on to me.
Oh, I should be looking in Evernote, shouldn't I? There it is. Okay, here we go. From Daryl Snow.
Right.
I thought we were going to have the audio ones.
No, see? No, it's just thrown you.
Yeah, it has completely. Right, here we go then.
I'm also going to change the next question as well, just to throw you.
What, swap them round?
No, I'm going to introduce a random new question.
Okay, fine.
That's in video format, and you've got to work out how to play that.
How do you get useful and honest feedback from clients after the project has finished? I always get good and often very brief generic feedback, even when I know myself that a project has gone badly or that the client isn't entirely happy. I've always tried to structure...
They just go, F off!
I've always tried to structure the request for feedback, asking for quantitative answers, yes/no answers, reference the original business objectives, etc. But I rarely get any tangible feedback that I can take back to the team and apply learnings from. Maybe the clients are all too busy or afraid of coming off rude or abrasive. If there is no ongoing relationship, then I suppose there is no value to the client in offering such feedback, is there? Have you guys ever had this problem?
No. Well, you said this is a really good question we should include on the show, but I don't...
Struggling to remember why now. Did I not say why?
No.
Damn.
You just said we ought to include it on the show, so I'm doing as I was told.
Okay.
Why is this a good question? Why is this a good question? Well, no, it's a valid question. I think what you need to do for a start is not stand in front of them holding a baseball bat and say, what did you think of the project? Then you might, might get more honest answers. I don't know.
Right, okay.
Feedback. Let's talk about feedback.
But yeah, this idea of clients being too polite.
I've never found that.
Honest feedback. No, I think maybe sometimes people feel... It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because I think that sometimes, particularly when you're looking at design, look and feel, that clients, because we've talked about the sign-off process, you know, don't have design by committee, blah, blah, blah,
yeah,
that they feel that they need to be more positive than they're actually feeling.
Right.
Which is tricky, because honesty is always the best policy in pretty much everything.
Yes. I mean, I guess there's... Right, first of all... Have a debrief meeting, mm-hmm. a face-to-face debrief meeting. That we find very helpful, don't we?
Yeah, and if you can't do that, just over the phone. Talk to people.
Talk to people.
Yeah.
I would also suggest that, look, if you think the project's gone shit, say so.
Yeah, and say why
and
you
say
think
why
so.
You think it's been
do
a problem.
Do you agree?
Yeah, and also to say, you know, If you're not getting much back from the client, try and encourage them to go first, because you don't want to lead unnecessarily. But, you know, if they're not being forthcoming, say to them, well, we felt this bit went well or this bit went badly, you know, and just kind of get them to respond to that. Because often, you know what it's like when someone asks you a question, you just go, oh, a bit like we did when yeah. this question was read out to begin with.
What did I say?
Yeah. You can't think why you think it's a good thing or not. So actually leading is all right in this situation. Give them something to respond to.
It's a bit like testimonials, really. Mm. There is a similarity here because people that really rate the project, and you say, well, can you give us a testimonial? And they go, yeah. And then you never hear anything.
No, because...
But yeah, and it's the same thing, I suppose, to a certain degree, as a project that hasn't gone great and you're asking them for feedback, that they just, oh, I can't be bothered. That's what it really is, isn't it?
Yeah,
I've got other things to do. So I'm agreeing with you here, Paul, by the way.
Yeah.
In the testimonial case, what I do is
I write it for them. Yes.
And, you know, I say... You know,
feel free to change it, but it gives them a starting point.
It's a starting point, and they can go, well, that's absolute rubbish. You're not the best web design agency in the world.
Yes.
Then if they don't agree to put that in, then I don't use it.
And so the same applies. If you say, you know, this was a great part of the project, and they go, hang on a minute, I don't think it really was. There was this issue, that issue. And you get them going, basically. But I do think it's a really valuable exercise, and do persevere with it.
Yeah, I think you basically have a meeting, even if it's a phone call.
Yes, there is a spin-off to this, which is pitching for work. Right. One area we do have problems with is getting honest feedback about why we didn't win something. Because we always ask that, don't we?
Yeah.
Why didn't we win it? What's the problem there? What are we doing wrong, Marcus? Well, I suppose if we knew, we'd do it right, wouldn't we?
Well, actually, I think I'm quite good at you know, it's...
Reading between the lines.
Exactly. This means that.
Yes. So give us an example.
I knew you were going to say that.
No, sorry. That's really annoying, isn't it? Well, they often make up some bullshit when you know either it's about the money, and they don't say that because, or they always had someone already in mind for the job.
Basically, we quite often, if we don't win a piece of work, we're quite often second.
Yes.
And I can kind of... Go if somebody says you were second but it was a toss up, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of thinking this is honest feedback.
Yeah.
They're being positive.
You just get, when people say you weren't even listed, you just don't believe them. Because obviously we should have been amazing.
Now, what if we don't get shortlisted, or if you're getting a lot of generic kind of standard, it wasn't you, it was us kind of stuff. I just think they had a preferred supplier instantly, yeah, every time. And they probably did, and that's life.
Yes.
So, blah, on that one. Honest feedback in those situations. Often, people won't feedback honestly because they're concerned that it will lead to problems.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying? You know, if they said, well, we didn't hire you because...
you were black.
that would be a good example, yes. I'm trying to think of a better example than that, or a more subtle example.
You're all too blokey is one we had once.
Well, no, yeah, I'm thinking about it. So if you presented a particular set of ideas or something like that, and they came back and said, we thought that your idea about X or Y wasn't right for us.
Yeah.
And then you look, it's wrong. You know, yeah, what they're saying to you is incorrect. And you're thinking, hang on a minute, it's perfect for you.
Yes.
So they would rather avoid maybe doing that, because you can then go back and say, well, so you marked us down on that.
Yeah.
That's not fair. And if you get into it, it's not fair conversation, then they might be forced into hiring you and they don't want to and all that kind of thing. It's basically, I've always made this kind of, oh, we must get feedback, we must find out why, and into the minutiae. But if you think about it, you're actually never really going to get anything of much value, because you're never really going to believe it. You're always going to wonder if bits are missing or whatever.
So is the same true with the post-project feedback? Are we wasting our time?
No, because that one, you could learn. Well, as long as people... I see no reason why somebody wouldn't be honest with you about, well, I think the project management... You said you'd get back to us on a weekly basis with a report, and you didn't.
Right.
You need to do that, otherwise you're going to piss your clients off in the future. Nothing wrong with saying that.
Well, unless they're reliant on you for ongoing support, and they might feel like they can't piss you off. Perhaps I'm grasping at straws here.
Yeah, I think you are.
Yeah.
But I think that this idea of people being too busy and thinking, well, I'd need to think about that. I need to go back through, what do we do, and write a bullet point list, and these are the pros, these are the cons. I'm too busy. I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
That is the wrong way of going about it. The right way, you covered it in the first sentence, is to talk to them.
Yeah.
Because if you have a conversation, they'll cover all of that while you're chatting.
Yeah.
And as long as you're taking notes, you'll learn stuff that you can pass back to your team, which is what Daryl says he wants.
Yeah. Those kind of post-project debrief meetings are really good anyway, because they're a sales opportunity. Mm-hmm. You know, you get people thinking about, well, what's the next stage? That should be part of it. So you're not just talking about, you know, are we good or are we bad? Because people, you know, why would client X want to waste their time having a meeting talking about, you know, making your life easier, you know, or better? But if you're having a meeting that's talking about next steps and how to run the website on an ongoing basis, and, you know, monitoring and iteration, all that kind of stuff, and this is a part of it, I think you'll find them much more responsive and much more friendly.
Yeah. And I suppose if as Daryl says, if it's just a one-off and you're never going to work with them again, then, you know, a five-minute phone call, they're not going to be bothered about. They'll happily do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyone would. I think we've murdered this one now.
We have murdered this one. It was a crap question. No, Daryl, it wasn't a crap question. It's just that I don't think we've got a lot to offer on it. It's all Marcus's fault for making me include it on the show, although I don't suppose he even remembers asking me. All right, so next up we have a question from MC Wilson. Have we had MC Wilson before?
I don't know. It's like MC Wilson.
No, we had a DJ somebody.
We've got an
MC. So this is an audio question, and he's asking about tabular data.
Greetings, citizens of BOAG world. Thank you for the excellent podcast. I've got a question for you guys about tabular data. Being that you're a design firm, folks probably come to you because they already know that they have no idea how to present data in a pleasing way. But I'm not a design firm. I'm an in-house web developer, and I have to deal with business users who frequently think that the only way to effectively present data is in tables. They think this because they work with Excel all day and tables in Word all day, and rows and columns is simply how they view the world. It can be difficult to convince them otherwise, especially when you're not somebody who is a web designer for a living and instead are a jack of all trades. So my question to you guys, what are the circumstances in which there's no other way to present data on a web page than in a table? And what are some ways that you guys have found in the past to avoid having to present data in tables? Bonus points if you can give me some pointers on how to make data beautiful, even if it's in a tabular format. Thanks for the great show, guys. Keep it up.
See, I like that.
Great show.
Great show.
Great show.
Thanked us at the beginning. Much better than what was it we had begging for audio questions. He appreciates us. We like you, Mr. MC.
Mm.
And also, hasn't he got a good... I think he's got a very good radio voice. I liked him. I like listening to him. Okay. He's my new best friend.
Obviously. Mr. MC Wilson, you should be scared.
Absolutely. Yes, it sounds like he has to work with Chris Scott all day, doesn't it, basically? So, I love Excel documents.
He's so not here to defend himself.
Chris has got such an unhealthy like of Excel, it worries me.
It's because he programs things in it.
He makes it do unnatural and unspeakable things.
He does. He makes it do stuff.
And he makes very pretty pictures in it as well, actually. Mm. Diagrams and pie charts. And if I feel like...
Well, that's the answer, isn't it? Diagrams and pie charts. There you go. I've answered your question. What's the next one?
This isn't a really a very you question, is it? You haven't got a lot to add to this particular subject.
That...
You?
Pie chart. There you go.
Pie chart.
That's a great way of presenting
data.
Well,
I've got to say, yeah, I mean, infographics was where I was going to go. There are so many cool infographics around these days that can present data in a so much more attractive way. But you need a designer for that. That's the trouble. That's fine.
But not pie charts and graphs and stuff like that.
No. You could do things like that. But, pie charts and graphs and things are good, yes, and definitely.
Just visual representations that people can understand immediately.
Absolutely. If you can afford to get yourself a designer, then getting to do a fancy infographic, it's money well spent. But if not... then there are tools that are appearing now to enable you to create your own infographics. I don't know how good they are. I haven't tried them myself. But things like Visually and PictoChart are two that I spotted that look quite good. So I'll link in the show notes to those.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely, considerably more engaging.
What's Google's thingy, it's charts and pie charts and graphs and tables thing called Google Charts, probably.
Google Spreadsheets, isn't it? Isn't it part of their spreadsheet program?
No.
Oh, it's a separate thing, is it?
Yeah. It basically, it creates things like pie charts on the fly, nicely pretty ones, out from your data.
Ah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you must know that.
How did I not know that?
It.
Have we?
Yes.
What, on websites?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool. Google Charts, there you go, link in the show notes. Now, there you go, I didn't know about that, so that'll help as well. Oh, I see, so you pump in a data and it's got like an API in it, and it turns out
nice, pretty pie charts.
I didn't know we did this.
You've learned something new today, Paul.
Damn, we're talented. Most disturbingly, I learned it from you, which is obviously very concerning, as it's a techie thing as well.
Yeah, for a while as well, Paul. How are you feeling now?
Display live data on your site. How have I missed this? Because I've no interest in Excel, that's why. So,
This is perfect for MC.
It is. But there's also cooler stuff you can do. I mean, you could even get into the realms of... So we've talked about getting a designer to go away and create a nice infographic that kind of lays out stats and stuff like that. But also motion graphics. There's some great kind of pseudo-animation-y stuff that shows off, different data in different ways. Again, you're going to have to hire someone to do that. But if it's an important piece of data, and they reckon that, people that have watched these kinds of videos are something like 80% more likely to go on to convert if that's a relevant thing for you. I don't know the details of it. And if the table of data is sufficiently simple, you can do some gorgeous stuff with it. For example, pricing data tables, you know, some pricing and kind of feature tables, you know, that they do some lovely stuff on some sites for that. So there's actually quite a lot of possibilities. But yeah, I Google Charts, who knew?
I did.
Well, yeah, apparently so. But before we move on, he asked for bonus points, didn't he? Bonus points if we can make suggestions about how to improve a boring data table. Basically, it boils down to styling and spacing. So add lots of padding, add borders, alternate row colours is a really good thing.
Makes it easy to read.
Yeah. Rollover highlights. So if you roll over a row, it highlights the whole row so you can kind of see where you are on the which row you're on.
Yep.
Basically, you know, I said things like borders and that kind of stuff, but understate it, right? It doesn't work if, you know, if you have really heavy borders and really strong background colours, it's like, whoa, and it actually makes it harder to read it. But very subtle variations in alternate row colours, a nice little border, lots of white space around it is great.
A good example of table design is in Pages. I mean, obviously, it's got different styles you can choose, but it's...
Yeah, so it's got some good starting points.
They look really nice.
Yeah, that's true.
Good examples of how things should be done.
The last thing you need to consider these days with tabular data as well, of course, is mobile devices. Mm. How do you display a massive table in a, you know, tiny little screen? And there's some interesting stuff being done in that, and I'll link to some of that stuff in the show notes. I won't go through all the different techniques that there are here, but certainly there are ways of hiding and showing stuff and you know, introducing some form of scrolling and various other techniques. So I'll link to all of that for you as well, MC, in the show notes, and you can check those out. But yeah, that's tabular data. I think there's nothing inherently wrong with it. There was this implication in the questions, everybody wants to use tabular data. But depending on what it is you do, that's a perfectly valid way of communicating stuff.
Mm.
But I agree. I think it depends on the type of person you are. I mean, I tease about Chris. But if you are that kind of person and your user is that kind of person, then that's a really good way of communicating.
Mm.
The problem comes is when... You know, you're trying to communicate with people that are more like me. When if I look at a table, I just start dribbling out the corner of my mouth. You know, and I literally cannot see data in tables. It doesn't make sense to me. It scrambles my brain. But the danger is, Mr. MC, is that you may be a like me, but if your user base is more like Mr. Chris Scott, then actually tables are all right and you shouldn't fight it. So don't dismiss stuff just because it's not you, is the moral of the story, or something. I don't know.
Quite hard for you to have said all that, I would have thought, Paul.
What, because English is not my first language?
No, because it's not really the way you look at life, is it?
I look at life that I'm right.
Exactly. Other people have an opinion?
Yes.
Surely not.
Well, their opinion is wrong, but you need to accept that they get stroppy when you tell them that, so... Anyway, let's move on. All right, so we come to our final question of this very exciting episode from Bob Reed. Are we ready to listen to... No, yeah. Not Bob Reed.
I was saying Bob was on last week.
Yes, so I'm looking at the wrong week. Ashley Mossel.
Do I need to look?
Mossel. Anyway, Ashley, should we have a listen to what he's got to say?
Yep.
He's shortened to the point. I like this.
I've started to notice the rise in popularity of templated designs in the web industry, and I'd love to know what your opinions are towards using pre-designed templates when working on client websites. Being a web designer myself, I've always frowned upon the use of templates and that using them felt a bit like cheating. But in today's world, are they more widely accepted, provided we are honest with our clients that they're going to receive a templated design?
Good question.
Yep.
I get this a lot, actually. It seems to be a topic of hot debate. I think he nailed it right at the end, didn't he? Did you hear what he said at the end?
Yeah, about sort of that you're honest
about
it.
You've got to tell them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, absolutely. I think you need to accept, you know, this is obviously... It depends on what level you're working at, doesn't it? If Headscape, I cannot imagine a scenario where that would ever be acceptable for the kind of work we do.
No. Well, we've recently worked with one client where they said, we would like you to use this template.
Oh, really?
Yes. WordPress template.
Oh, okay. Thing. That's very unusual, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and it was just... we've worked with them before. I want to say the Royal College of Art, but it's not them. It's a similar institution. Right. Anyway, and off the back of that, we proposed a job to somebody that we wanted to work with. I can't remember who it was.
Right. You're lacking a lot of the details.
No detail today. But they had a very limited budget.
And I yeah.
Anyway, blah. They said no.
Right.
So, and it was kind of, well, that was enough for me. I'm not going down that route again from a Headscape point of view. But looking at some what's available.
That's some amazing stuff.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and, you know, I think it ultimately comes down, it's all about return on investment, isn't it? It's what it comes down to. And if you're a small organisation with a limited budget, and the web isn't that crucial to the success of your organization, then why not use an off-the-shelf template? And as long as you as a web designer are honest about that and you explain the reasons why, then I don't see a problem with it. I think ultimately mine off-the-shelf templates are never going to be as good a solution as a custom designed job that you know exactly meets clients' requirements and branding and usability and user audiences and business objectives and all that kind of stuff. But you know, if money is limited and if time is limited and if the importance of the website is limited, then yeah, compromise down. I mean, we do that all the time. You know, even working at the higher end of the industry like we do, you know. We could give every client a Rolls Royce, but they don't all need a Rolls Royce. Sometimes they only need a Skoda, you know, and that's fine. And that's perfectly adequate. So I've no problem with design templates whatsoever. As long as you are honest with the client, I think what it comes down to, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah. Maybe if you'd asked that question 5 years ago, then we would just go, no, it's just because there's what's available is really quite high quality.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, obviously there's different versions. There's, you know, you're talking about WordPress templates that are available, but you know, you can also download PSDs that you mark up as you want to. There's a lot of things to consider. I mean, if you're getting a WordPress template, for example, you know, is it responsive? Does the client need it to be responsive? You know, if it's just a PSD that you're then going to code up, is that actually worth the money, or is it you're better off just, you know, getting a complete ready-made template? So there are a lot of nuances.
Depends where
this.
Your skills lie as well, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you're a front-end coder, then, yeah, probably a Photoshop document is enough for you to work with. But, you know, in other situations, you might be better off giving them just a whole template. I think what you do have to worry about with getting whole templates is maintenance. It's like I took, for my church website, I was like, oh, I can't be bothered to do this. So I just got an off the shelf template. I customized it, built it. Actually, now I'm regretting it because I'm trying to maintain someone else's code base, you know, somebody else's template. And I don't really understand how it works or what it does. And so if ever I want to do something slightly different, then it's like a nightmare. And so it can come back to bite you. So you do need to be aware of that. The same is true actually even with the design template. You know, fine, you get a design your PSD and you apply it and it all works great until the client decides that they want something else. And are you capable of producing a new user interface element that is in the same style as what you've already got? So there are challenges to this kind of area. And I'm not saying it's easy, but it may be the most cost-effective way to go. So, yes, I think...
What about, if we're going to take it a step even further down, about these sites? I can't think of any of them they're called, but, you know, basically, I know nothing about design or coding, and I'm going to just go and go to somewhere where I can build my website sort of on the fly.
Yeah, so Squarespace do something like this. Link in the show notes.
Do we have an opinion on that?
I mean, this is where you get into the realms of desktop publishing almost. You know, when desktop publishing first came along, right?
Yeah.
Suddenly everybody had a computer and they were capable of making a poster.
Yes.
Right? So what we ended up with is a load of shit posters.
Yeah, and it's like we've got the world is full of crappy photographers.
Yes, for exactly the same reason.
But has it improved since then, I suppose, is my question.
Yeah, I think it has a bit. I mean, things like Squarespace and stuff like that, you're working with predefined templates and, you know, they kind of, to some degree, keep you under control and stop you doing anything too stupid. But the truth is, it's, you know... You get what you pay for, don't you? Nothing is going to be as good as hiring a professional to produce a website. But again, you know, for example, let's go back to my church website. Actually, probably, you know, there's no way my church is ever going to pay a web designer to build their website. If they didn't know me, you know, that was gullible enough to do it for them, then, you know, something like Squarespace where they could kind of build it themselves probably wouldn't be a bad idea. My dad is another example where, he's a wildlife photographer. The web isn't that big a deal for him, really. He's kind of got to have a website. He's got a reasonable eye for kind of composition and design and that kind of stuff because he's a photographer.
Yeah.
So he's probably more than capable of building something with some, you know, with a tool like.
With some tools, yeah.
Yeah, with the right kind of tools.
Okay.
So I'm very pragmatic about it, yeah.
Or just do a Facebook page.
Or just have a Facebook page, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Or in his case, a Flickr profile,
yeah.
You know, which he uses a lot. So, you know, I don't think even every business needs a website. You're entirely right. I mean, my local coffee shop downtown is on Facebook, but it doesn't need a website. You know, why the hell would it really these days? And I know a lot of people will get, you know, shirty because, well, you know, Facebook's the closed web and stuff like that. I've got no, what's the word? I was going to say scruples, but that's
not I've got no scruples. And that's the end of the show.
Yeah. I've got no ideological issues with this. I think it comes down to what's right for your business, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yes.
So yes, I think that probably more than wraps up that question. I think that has hammered that question to death. So shall we move on to your witty and entertaining joke?
This is from Mr. Ian Lasky again.
Oh, good old Ian. Yeah. I want to meet Ian.
Well, maybe you could one day.
Perhaps I already have.
Maybe you have, yes.
I do have a habit of doing that. Yes. Absolutely.
Right, here we go. A funeral service is held for a woman who just passed away. As the pallbearers...
Sorry to interrupt.
That's all right.
A funeral service was just for a woman that's just passed away. What, in preference to a dog that died 80 years ago? You know, that doesn't... Of course it's going to be for someone that's recently died. That was an unnecessary part of the joke. I'm sorry, just carry on.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
As the pallbearers carry the casket out, they accidentally bump into a wall. They hear a faint moan.
Ooh.
They open the casket and find that the woman is actually alive.
So, in fact,
she hadn't passed away.
No, she hadn't passed away.
Shut up, Paul.
Okay.
She lives for more than 10 years and then dies. They have another funeral for her. At the end of the service, the pallbearers carry out the casket. As they were walking, the husband cries out, "Watch out for the wall!" Yeah, right, move on.
Yeah. Okay, so yes, that's another podcast done, and entertaining as always.
I think you say yourself.
Oh, that was so dull. I think we failed this week.
No, we haven't.
We failed. I feel, dear listener, or six of you,
I blame the questions.
Absolutely.
Therefore, I'm blaming the listeners.
What do you think of my idea for the next season that I sent you through?
Great. What was it?
The masturbate.
Oh, that was... Yes.
Not that I'm five or anything. No, we're gonna do the great debate next season, which basically is we take a subject like Photoshop versus fireworks or in-browser compared to graphics tool or whatever.
I have so much to say on these things, aren't I?
Are you being sarcastic?
Yes.
Well, some of them we will, like music or not music. I don't know. What do you know about? Cricket, does it make sense? You know, things like that.
Yeah, fine.
So, no, I think that's going to be a good season. I'm looking forward to that. But we're not done with this one yet. That's not until after August.
How many more of these have we got?
Gazillions.
Oh, all right, okay.
Gazillions and gazillions. So we need more questions, actually. We're running a bit low on the old question front.
Okay.
So if you have a question, send it through to paul@boagworld.com. Audio questions are always preferred, but we will settle for textual ones.
Yes.
We don't want questions in interpretive dance, because that doesn't work for an audio podcast. But other than, what did you make that face? Because that was such a bad joke that you felt a need to pull a face at me.
Yeah, okay.
Something like that. All right, then. So send your questions through and we will talk again next week. Thank you very much for listening and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.